Terry, you do well leading the singing. Thanks. It's nice to know that we have another one that can lead like that. Today is the last Lord's Day in this year. Today is the last time we will observe the Lord's Supper this year. Wednesday will be the last day of this year. We tend to think about last things. We tend to emphasize the last words that are said. Probably when you and I leave here today, we will more likely remember the last thing that someone said to us than anything that was said at another time. It's not uncommon for me to hear people say, "I well remember the last words that my dad spoke," or "the last words that my mother spoke." I have to throw you in one little chuckle here, and the ladies won't like this when I'm through. But one fella asked his friend if he had heard that a mutual friend of theirs had died. And he said, "No, what were his last words?" And he said he didn't have any. His wife was with him till the end. Now, as I said, I knew you women wouldn't like that. But back to the serious matter. We do tend to remember the last things that are said by those that we love. I remember the last few minutes that I was with my wife before she died. I remember some of the things that were said in the last few words that she said, probably about an hour before she died. We were blessed in that her thinking process and her memory was complete up until almost the end. I say all of what I have just said to introduce the lesson this morning and the lesson tonight. This morning, we're going to look at the Bible at some of the instances of the last things that were said by different people. And tonight, we're going to analyze the last words of Christ, the last message that he left with us. And I asked you a couple weeks ago to be thinking about that lesson and to try to determine what is the last thing that Jesus said that we have a record. We'll be talking about that tonight. And I hope you'll try to come back tonight, and especially since we have so many people out of town, I hope you'll put forth maybe a little added effort to be here this evening. Every word that is spoken is important. Jesus said in Matthew 12, 36 and 37 that we'll give an account for every word that is said. However, there are some words that seem to be more important than others. There are special occasions that we have in life where something is said that is especially meaningful. I received a card yesterday from one of my granddaughters in which she said some very complimentary things. I put all of my other Christmas cards under the tree, but I opened that one up and set it up on my desk. I want to look at that every once in a while because I don't get too many cards, especially from my grandchildren, that say anything. But anyway, words are meaningful, and some of the last words that are said by an individual are the words that emphasize what's important. I've told you this story before, but I tell it again to emphasize our lesson today. Two fellows were fighting side by side in, I believe it was World War II. And they were hit by enemy fire. One of them was hit very badly. And his buddy realized that this one was probably not going to make it. And he knew that that man had a newborn baby son that he had not seen. And so as he was dying, his buddy asked him, "If I make it and am able to see Johnny, is there anything you want me to tell him?" And that dying man, knowing that that was the last thing that he would ever say and the last word that he would ever get to his son, said, "Tell Johnny the word is integrity." I suspect that when that boy was told that, he was old enough to understand it, that he never forgot that word the rest of his life, because that was his dad's dying word. What were the last things that different people said? As I researched this, I found three people particularly in their last words who expressed an interest in others. In Genesis 49, verse 1 says that Jacob was about to die. And the last verse of the chapter says that he died. In between those two verses, Jacob addresses all of his sons. Remember, he had 12 sons. And he says, "This is what is going to happen, or this is what I'm predicting, or this is what I want for each of you." As he was dying, he was thinking about his sons, and of course, through them, what would happen to the people of God. Jacob was the one whose name was changed to Israel. He was the one after whom the children of Israel would be called for the rest of their lives, and even today we talk about the children of Israel back in the Old Testament times. Now here is Israel, Jacob, about to die. What does he want to talk about? He wants to talk about his sons, and particularly how they fit into God's plan. In 1 Kings 2, verses 1 through 3, David was about to die. He spent his last words with Solomon, who would become the king after him. And he was telling Solomon there what he wanted him to do and how he wanted him to approach the kingdom. In fact, he said it like this: "Keep the charge of the Lord thy God to walk in his ways, to keep his statutes and his commandments and his judgments and his testimonies, as it is written in the law of Moses." Just before that, he said, "I go the way of all the earth. Be thou strong, therefore, and show thyself a man." David, talking to his son Solomon, who was not only his son, but who would be the king that would follow him, said, "I'm about to leave. I want you to be strong and act like a man." That wouldn't be bad advice for any father to give his son, would it? And then he explained what he meant when he said, "I want you to look at the statutes of God and the commandments of God and the testimony of God, and I want you to show yourself a man in these things." David was interested in his son who would follow him as the king, and interested in that son standing up firm as a man and also depending on God. In 2 Kings, the second chapter, verses 9 through 11, we have a part of the explanation of the time that Elijah was to finish his life on this earth. And if you noticed, I didn't use the word death there because Elijah was caught up, you remember. But before he was talking with Elisha, who would be the prophet that would come after him. And he asked Elisha, "What would you like for me to do for you before I leave?" Elisha said, "I'd like for you to bestow upon me a double portion of what you have in your relationship to God." And the indication is that that's what Elijah did. But notice the question that he asked. "Elisha, what can I do for you before I leave?" We've asked that question sometimes when we're leaving for a journey or when we're leaving someone's house where we have visited, or even sometimes when I'm leaving a hospital room after I've visited someone, I'll ask, "What can I do for you?" But these were the last words of Elijah, at least the introduction to what would be the last words that he would say. And he was interested in somebody else. It is true that we need to be interested in ourselves in one way as we approach the time of death. It certainly would be appropriate for each one of us, if we know that death is near, to stop and look at ourselves and be sure that we have the right relationship with God. But it is interesting that in all three of these cases, their thoughts were about their families and those who would take their responsibilities when they were gone. An interest in others. I also find, by looking at one of the thieves that was on a cross by Jesus, that the last words of others tend to involve complete honesty. A person who maybe has misrepresented things much of his life usually will come to face the facts when he realizes that he's going to die. Notice in the case of this particular thief that the indication is that at first he, along with the other one, railed on Jesus. They both seemed to be mocking Jesus in a sense when they were first put on the crosses. But then as time went by, this particular thief rebuked the other one. And he said, "We," talking about himself and the other thief, "we deserve to be where we are. But this man in the center doesn't. He doesn't deserve what we have and what we're getting and what because of what we have done." And then out of that heart of complete honesty and a sense of complete faith, I think, he turned to Jesus and said, "Remember me when thou comest into thy kingdom." Now look at the change that's taken place in this man from the time the crucifixion started and he was railing against Jesus, to where now, with the events as they unfold, he realizes what's happening and who the one is in the center. And so he says to the other thief, "We need to quit mocking. This is not right to mock this man. He doesn't deserve what we deserve." And then from a personal way, or in a personal way, he said, "When you come into your kingdom, remember me." That's about as honest as you can get. And just after that, Jesus said, "Today thou shalt be with me in paradise." And let me pause long enough here to make a point that we need to remember. The reason that Jesus could say to him, "Today thou wilt be with me in paradise," is not on the question of whether or not he'd been baptized. It was on the question that Jesus, the answer to which is that Jesus had the power to forgive sins at that time. He had forgiven the sins of the one that was brought to him on the cot, you remember. He said, "Thy sins be forgiven thee, get up and walk." Jesus had the power to forgive sins while he was still alive. And he was still alive when he made that statement. He had not died. The covenant had not changed. The new covenant had not come into existence. And so he was able to say to the thief, thy sins are forgiven thee. He said it like this, "Today thou shalt be with me in paradise." And that's the same way as saying thy sins are forgiven, and that's the same way as saying you're on your way to heaven. Because if we make it to paradise, that's where we know that we'll go from there to heaven eventually. So here was a man, this particular thief, who faced death with complete honesty. He accepted his shortcomings, and he turned to Jesus for forgiveness for those wrongs and for the opportunity of salvation. There are some who have what we call deathbed religion. I've known of those who literally were out of Christ all their lives up until just before they died. And, as far as I am able to tell, sincerely turned and obeyed the gospel, became Christians, and died in the Lord. And certainly all of us need to be like the thief in that if we realize that death is certain and he was in a position that he did, that we are completely honest with our own personal situations. I also see complete faith. Now, I mentioned faith in the case of one of these others, but let me use two examples to emphasize this. In Genesis 50, we have the record of the death of Joseph. And Joseph's request, that's recorded at least, is, "When you go out of Egypt, take my bones with you." Now put that in focus. They would go out of Egypt almost 400 years later. Here's Joseph with enough faith in the promise that God has made and enough belief that someday the children of Israel will leave the bondage of Egypt and go back to the promised land, to their homeland. He believed it enough that he had them to promise that you'll take my bones with you. And if you're reading where the scripture describes the time that the children of Israel left Egypt, there is a statement in that that says that they took the bones of Joseph with them. He believed in God's promises enough that he requested that his bones be taken back to the homeland. That's faith in God's promises. And then there's the last words of Paul that we have recorded. It's almost certain that the last book that Paul wrote is 2 Timothy. And in the last chapter of that book, at verse 6, he says, I am ready to be offered, and the time of my departure is at hand. That's his facing death. Here's what he said. I've fought a good fight, I've finished the course, I've kept the faith. Henceforth, there is laid up for me a crown of righteousness, which the Lord will give me in that day, and not to me only, but unto all them also that love his appearing. There are just a few words after that in that fourth chapter of 2 Timothy. But here's the central part of the last message that we have from the Apostle Paul, the last recorded message that we have from the Apostle Paul. He said, I have a crown waiting. And not only that, I believe that anybody who loves God in the way that I do also will have a crown of righteousness. That's complete faith. And that's really one of the things that makes it possible for us to look death squarely in the face. I have stood by many, many times, even held the hand of a person who took their last breath. I have heard the last words of many different people over the years. And when a person is able to look at death and say, I'm ready, I wasn't there, but one of my close friends who died a few years ago in Jackson General, her last words were, let me go. She realized that death was certain. She believed she was ready. And she said to her family, let me go. That's complete faith that things are in the hands of God and that we are ready to go. I also find two occasions where the last words of people, at this particular time at least, had to do with forgiveness. You remember Stephen in Acts 7? They stoned him to death. But recorded in that, just before he died, he said, Father, lay not this sin against their charge. The very people that were doing the acts that were bringing about his death were the people for whom he was concerned. I don't want to go to my death with any feeling in my heart that's wrong toward anybody else. And I think that's the way Stephen felt. He wanted to be sure. He had been rather strong in his condemnation of these people. He had called them stiff-necked and uncircumcised, just like their fathers who had killed the Jews. He said, that's exactly who you are. They didn't like it. They killed him. But just before he died, he prayed that even those who killed him would come to repentance and receive forgiveness. And though these are not the last words of Jesus, they are some of his last words on the cross. When he said, among the seven different things that are recorded that he said while on the cross, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. The very people who had nailed the nails in his hands and had put the spear in his side, the very people who had condoned his mock trials and brought him to crucifixion were the very ones that he was talking about. He said, Father, they don't realize what they're doing. I don't think he was praying for God to forgive them in blanket coverage, because he was bringing in a system whereby there would be conditions for forgiveness. But I think he was praying that these very people that were putting him to death would have an opportunity to make things right and be right with God. Forgiveness of others. And then I find that there are those who had an interest particularly in others and a plea for them to be obedient. Joshua, in some of the last words at least that are recorded of his, and a little later on in this chapter and toward the end of his book, it talks about his death. But in Joshua 24:15, he said, "Choose ye this day whom ye will serve. But as for my house, me and my house, we'll serve the Lord." Here Joshua presented to them, you've got the gods back in Egypt that we left. You've got the gods of the people that are here in this land. You've got the God of heaven. And you have a responsibility to choose, but now here's the advice I'd give. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to serve the God of heaven. He was appealing to them to obey. Many times, in cases where I have been with people or aware of what was said by people, there was an appeal made by maybe a father to his children, be faithful Christians the rest of your life. And I don't know if I had an opportunity to know that I was about to die and I had an opportunity to say something to my family, that wouldn't be the words that I would want to say. Remain faithful to God. Obey God. Stick with Him. Stay with what the Bible says. And that's what Joshua said. And if you go back to David that we mentioned on the point of interest in others, you see this also when he said to Solomon, "Solomon, hold to the statutes of God. Do the commandments of God. Listen to the testimonies of God." He was appealing to Solomon to obey God and follow God as he led the kingdom that he was about to take over. Now look at what we have said this morning. Five things, as we've noticed probably about 10 or 12 different people and their last words. An interest in others, complete honesty, complete faith, a forgiving heart, and an appeal to be obedient. That's pretty much the kind of advice we need all the time, isn't it? Those are important to be our last words, but those would be important to be any of our words. And let me emphasize this. Sometimes we don't know when our last words will be our last words. There have been people who thought everything was right, and in a second, they were gone. They didn't even realize that what they had just said would be their last words. So, the importance of the lesson today is this. The only way to be sure that our last words are what they should be is to be careful about what all our words are. Because any time we are speaking, those could be our last words. And so we need to be careful about what we say and the attitudes that we express to others. This morning, not for sure that there's anybody here that hasn't been baptized into Christ, but if there is, we can help you, we'd be glad to. And all of us who are Christians need to take inventory of our lives as we come to the end of this year. And if there's something that needs to be forgiven publicly, then respond and we'll take care of it as God teaches, as together we stand and sing.
Oh, most persuaded.